It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
Let's talk legal. Let's do that. Let's continue the conversation. Welcome, Wes. Welcome, Cecil, from Harvell & Collins. Last week we were talking about elder law, and we're going to continue that discussion. So
we are, Mike. Good morning to you as well. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Last week we did kind of begin the conversation of elder law. It's such a broad subject. And one of the things that we talked about was the necessity for a well-drafted power of attorney, durable power of attorney. And I'd like to take a moment and explain why. Many of the transfers that we utilize in planning to protect assets for an elder client, the necessary specific language to, for instance, create a revocable trust, to transfer assets into a revocable trust or irrevocable trust, and to make gifts, for instance, to apply for or to make application for Medicaid and to file the necessary forms such as an intent to return home. That is a particular form that Medicaid many times has our clients execute. Well, if mom or dad or grandmother, granddad are unable to do these documents and sign them because they are in a facility, then it is critical that the power of attorney have the specific language in it to grant this authority to their loved one, to their agent, their son, their daughter, their grandson, whatever the case might be. So we really do start here with the importance of a durable power of attorney. One of the things that Wes and I do right at the outset of almost instantaneously after we get the name of the client is, well, do you have a power of attorney? Did you bring it with you? Let me take a moment and review it. And many, many times that power of attorney does not have the necessary provisions that we want in it, and that is one of the first things that we will rush out and do, and to talk to the elder person, hopefully, who might be in the home or the nursing facility, and hopefully they have the capacity or understanding to re-execute a power of attorney.
So people that have a power of a durable power of attorney, they think they're covered, but really sometimes it's not as thoroughly expressed, so that's why you need to come into Harvell & Collins and have that review, that initial consultation.
Right, Mike. I mean, the power of attorney we see more often than not would be this, what we refer to as the statutory power of attorney.
Okay.
There's a particular statute on point where the North Carolina General Statutes have a specific type of short-form power of attorney that can be used just for folks to sign to designate someone to take care of paying bills and those type things.
Okay.
But that type of power of attorney, with the statutory language in it, does not have the necessary powers in it for the person who is named in order to make, you know, certain types of gifts, set up trusts, do the type things that we're going to talk about here in a minute with regard to making sure we protect our assets as allowed, you know, by the law in the event that we, you know, end up in a nursing facility. So kind of, you know, the big picture with where we led up to last week is that, you know, we talked about how expensive, you know, nursing home care, skilled nursing care has become, around $7,000 a month. We've talked about that. So we're going to lead up into, okay, what can be done to protect our assets in the event our loved one ends up having to go into a care facility.
Okay, good.
So again, what Cecil was just mentioning is that many times we have a client who doesn't have the capacity to be able to enter a new power of attorney. So we're left with the power of attorney that we have, and maybe it has the language in it that we need, and maybe it doesn't. Because the structuring of assets is going to require some moving of parts, some let's place property in a certain way, let's do that. And every file is different and every situation is different, but we'll kind of talk about the big picture with regard to that.
Okay, good.
I think what folks need to know about is that, you know, a lot of folks think that, okay, well, I've got Medicare. So, and Medicare, when I go to the doctor, covers about everything. I'm really happy with my Medicare. So if I go to a nursing facility, I'm sure they're going to pick up on that bill. Well, Medicare does not cover skilled nursing care beyond a very short period of time. Depending on the circumstances, Medicare is only going to cover up to, in most cases, 20, 21 days, okay? Sometimes it's referred to as the 20-day. Sometimes it's referred to as the 21-day. But basically, it's a 21-day period of time that's normally referred to as the rehab period.
Yeah.
That's like if someone ends up having to go into the hospital, and then they're discharged. And when they're just discharged, they go into the rehab efforts at the,
sure.
the nursing facility.
Sure.
Medicare is covering that. But in the event the opinion of the caring physician is that the person is not improving and has to stay there, and it maybe is basically institutionalized in the facility, then we lose the Medicare and we then go to private pay, which mean what does private pay means? Well, it means that you're having to come out of your pocket $7,000 a month somehow to pay this bill because the Medicare doesn't cover any further. Now, if there's long-term care insurance, then that might kick in. But those are that's kind of the way the cookie crumbles with regard to that. So when we're talking about how we're going to pay for that $7,000 a month, we then look at whatever other government benefits there may be other than the Medicare in order to kick in, and we there are specific provisions in the Medicaid laws that do allow for all of that $7,000 a month to be paid over and above your income. So, for example, let's say we have an individual who has income, just using a round figure, Social Security retirement of $1,000 a month.
Okay.
Well, and the nursing home bill is $7,000 a month. Medicaid gets a little bit better deal. So they won't have to pay the $6,000, but they'll have to pay whatever the difference is. So the person who's receiving the Medicaid is not going to have to come out of pocket. But that's means tested. That's based on how, what your assets are. And that's what we're going to talk about today a little bit. You can't, generally speaking, you can't have over $2,000 of countable assets as an individual and become eligible for adult Medicaid services, okay, $2,000. Okay, but you can do things to protect a home. You can do things to protect other real property. You can do things to protect, you know, savings. So we're going to talk about that, but the big it's kind of a lead up because we've got to kind of educate a little here before we get to
some
that.
Definitions and
correct,
specific.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So just another way to reiterate everything that Wes was just saying is that. Let me just say it again because it doesn't hurt. Medicare, we're all going to go on Medicare. We're getting there, aren't we, Mike?
I'm close. I'm 6 years out,
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Medicare pays for so many things, and most folks are very pleased with Medicare. Medicare will pay to rehabilitate is the word that is used in a long-term care facility. If there is a hope and that rehabilitation will place the client back into the home, then Medicare is going to pay for that rehabilitation, the 21-day period and maybe sometimes up to 100 days. But after it has been determined that there is no further rehabilitation that will significantly and medically improve our client would likely be deemed to be long-term care. Long-term care then will not be paid for by Medicare. And as a result of that, Medicaid needs to be looked into at that point in time. Okay. Now, the first thing, Mike, that we do for clients is that we look at their real estate assets. And most folks have a home. Many times it is paid for. They may have a second piece of property, maybe, you know, a farm, a lot, something of that nature. Maybe they even have an income-producing property, a rental home, or a rental property in some way. The real estate needs to be looked at very carefully. And basically, Mike, the real estate needs to be placed into a trust, and into a combination of trust so that we do not trigger the five-year look-back rule. Mm-hmm. All of our clients seem to know, and our listeners know right now, that there is, in fact, a 60-month look-back rule. But we, of course, work the file in a way, applying the law to the facts of the client so as to help them to avoid that five-year look-back rule. Many of our clients got the planning done more than 5 years ago, but a lot of clients do not. Their loved one is currently in the facility, just went in last month, mm-hmm. or, you know, a couple of months ago. So we certainly need to be able to have in our expertise, the expertise to work around, if you will, the five-year look-back rule, because that is that's a dead-in-the-water concept if you don't have a lawyer who can assist you in that with that particular issue.
Is it wise for somebody now to start planning the assets? I mean, they're not in any facility. They're healthy as an ox.
Yes.
And start it now so the clock is ticking on that five-year look.
We do a tremendous amount of planning. Absolutely.
Pre-planning, yeah.
Just like we pre-plan with regard to having our estate documents in order.
Yeah.
You know, our will, our power of attorney, our health care, our HIPAA release, all of those are many times pre-planning documents for the future. A combination in our office of discussing those clients would be also discussing whether or not this client wants to go ahead and begin the process of some sort of asset protection planning, which would involve the use of a trust.
Very smart. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break here. Let's hold that. We're going to continue when we come back talking about more elder law with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. I got it. I'll get it one of these months.
Yeah,
we'll come back after this short break. We can take your phone calls too at 252-247-7282. We'll be right back after this quick break. Stay tuned. We're continuing our discussion of Let's Talk Legal with the folks from Harvell and Collins in studio, and we're talking about elder law. A lot to unpack here, gentlemen. It's a very interesting and deep topic. So let's continue this good conversation.
Yeah. So Cecil was referring to really answering your question when you asked, you know, do people normally do this type of planning in advance,
yeah.
or do they wait to the last second?
Right.
What do they do?
Yeah, I think I know the answer there.
Cecil's response was, you know, in many cases, folks do this asset protection planning as part of their estate planning when they're dealing with their will, power of attorney, other tax-related issues, those type things. So another way to think about that is that in many cases, we don't really have much forewarning as it relates to our loved one having to go into a nursing home facility.
Yeah.
It could be as a result of a car accident, could be a result of a fall, a broken mm-hmm. hip, surgery.
Stroke,
these kind of things. So in many cases, we're needing to move the pieces of the puzzle with regard to assets in a very relatively quick way when the person has to go into the facility. If we already have the trust set up that he's referred to and have the real estate protected, then it is the work that needs to be done takes on a completely different complexion. It's easier to deal with. It's not a stop, drop, and roll type situation because we've already got that framework set up. So that is one way that I like to look at it is that if we've already got 50, 60, 70% of this done in the event that the person has to go into the facility, then we're moving, you know, some other parts of the puzzle pieces, then it works better for the family in almost every situation.
Yeah, pre-planning is great. It happened to my mother-in-law. She was healthy as an ox and then fell one day, taking coffee grounds out to the garden, broke a hip. Next thing she knows, she's in Wilmington, and then she's shipped back up to Jacksonville into a nursing home.
Right.
So it can happen in a flash.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mike, to get back, to go back to the real estate a minute, you know, most clients, many folks, one of their largest assets is, in fact, their home, their property, their land. They've worked their life to many times have it paid for. Some folks might have some small mortgage left, or they might have an equity line that they utilize in some way, shape, or form. Some clients even have, I might add to the formula here, a reverse mortgage, mm-hmm. but they have a lot of equity in that property. The key here is to restructure, to put the property in a little bit of a different cubbyhole, put the round peg in the round hole, the square peg in the square hole, so that that property is protected from any kind of lien recovery, you know, by Medicaid, should our loved one go into a facility. There is certainly a way to structure these real property holdings in a manner whereby they are, you know, if you will, off the radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is always the first objective, it seems, of a client. Many of them are still living off of their monies, if you will. They might have a couple of CDs in the bank, maybe some other kinds of assets, but they're driven usually to seek legal advice as a result of the desire to protect their largest holding, which in most folks' life is in fact their real estate holding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you talk about keeping it off the radar, but really what the whole theme here is protection.
Correct.
You're trying to build a wall around that to take it off the table and out of reach.
It's untouchable. Because the trust is a separate legal entity, Mike, that is separate and distinct from John Doe or Mary Doe or John and wife Mary Doe. They're going to own their properties most likely individually. When we go to check the registry of deeds, we're going to see that the title is held individually by Mr. Doe or Mrs. Doe. And what we as the lawyer are doing is we are changing the nature of that title out of an individual name into the name of a trust, which is a contract between Mr. Doe and usually his, you know, adult trusted child, that the child will hold the property for the benefit of their parent for as long as they live, and then upon the death of mother and dad, will distribute it according to most of the time pursuant to the same terms that are in their last will and testament, equally to the children, whatever the case might be. But a trust is going to be a separate legal entity, different and distinct from John and Mary as individuals.
More protection.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we get the question all the time, well, you know, why can't I just convey, or the word that folks use, why can't I just deed this property, my home, whatever I may own, over into my kid's name? That's where I want it to go anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Simple.
So that transfer, that gift is sanctionable. So basically, since Medicaid is means tested, you have to look at what the countable assets are, and I'll talk about that in a second because you're asking me about that off the air.
Yeah,
I told you, well, it'll take me a minute to answer it, so let's do it when we get back on there.
We'll get it.
But you understand if you just transfer that real property and you put it in the kid's name, well, that's a sanctionable transfer. That means that Medicaid for 5 years can look back and see if there was any transfer of asset. This could be money. This could be real estate. This could be, you know, whatever it may be. And in the event that it's there's a sanctionable transfer, then Medicaid is going to make a determination based on the law as to how many months there's no Medicaid eligibility. Okay, and so you know you can't just, and it's pretty logical. I mean, we kind of all know this. You can't just pick everything up and put it in the kid's name and say I'm eligible. But the planning techniques that we use allows us to get the same benefit of protecting the property, making sure that it's going to be there for the surviving spouse, making sure it's going to be there for the kids or whoever you want your assets to go to, making sure we don't create any tax consequences with these type of structures, and also making it not countable and not subject to estate recovery, which is this lien process. So you really get the best of all worlds by planning in this way, protecting the property in this way, and then you're assured that the property will pass on to the next generation by using these trusts. But this is not just the, you know, kind of trust in, on the shelf. There's some specific details in the trust that kind of probably are beyond the scope of us going into all those details on the program. But the trust is for, is all in the family. Sometimes the word trust kind of gets people's attention. What are you talking about? A bank?
Yeah.
You're talking about, no, this is everything in the family. Normally a child is the trustee or one of the trustees. Normally the spouse is the other trustee. So everything is in the family. You control it. If you want to change it, you can change it. But the property is protected. And then upon the death of the last to die between husband and wife, the property goes out free of lien to whoever the beneficiaries are. It would normally be the kids, but whomever they wanted it to go to, grandkids, whatever.
Yeah. So oftentimes people make that assumption, Wes, like you said, just like, I'm covered, I got that out of the way, checkbox, I'm done. But
or they we have a lot of files over the years where folks come to us and say, well, I heard this was okay. Well, it wasn't okay, and we're having to undo some things to make it right, or it's too late to undo the things. So we can talk about that. I don't know. Or is it break time yet?
Yeah, we'll take a break here, then we'll come back and wrap up. We'll take a break, and we'll be back with Harvell and Collins. If you wish to reach them after the show, please give them a call at 252-726-9050. They're located here in Morehead City at 1107 Bridges Street. You can go online to harvellandcollins.com, and we'll take this quick break. And when we return in the final moments, we'll continue. We're not going to wrap up elder law discussion because it's a deep topic, and we'll probably be talking about this in the weeks to come. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. I was asking some questions here during the break, and I'm going to fire away here, guys. If I take you off your rails, I apologize. But earlier, Wes, you said countable assets. What is that? Yeah. Quick definition on that.
Well, you know, countable assets is, you know, if you have money, for example, in the bank, that's countable. Okay. There's certain assets that aren't countable. You can have a car, one car, not countable. Personal property, diamond ring. Things in the house, furniture, clothing, stuff like that, not countable. Medicaid's not going to come into your house and start counting up all your
that stuff.
Coin collection, spoons and forks.
Yeah,
coin collection sometimes,
maybe
depending on the value. Where the rubber hits the road here with regard to this is real estate.
Okay,
if you own real estate in your own individual name, it's a countable asset.
I get
now, there's some moving parts there. You can sign a document called an intent to return home if it's your home, and Medicaid will tell you. It's not countable now. We can't count it. That's a catch-22, because if you then receive Medicaid, okay, and you have this home, even though you've signed the intent to return home, when you pass away, Medicaid will come. They'll have a lien. It'll be on the property, and then they'll come force the sale of the property to get repaid.
So they can come after it.
Absolutely. They can, and they do.
And that's nasty, I bet.
They hire local legal counsel.
If it's not structured properly.
Well, that's what we're talking about, protecting and structured.
Of course.
If you follow what we've been talking about today, you'll build that wall.
Another way to think of countable is, you know, is it spendable? Can the client obtain access to the funds and spend it on their nursing care? For instance, the cash value in a life insurance policy, over $5,000 is the rule. But if a client has $25,000 of cash value in their policy, then we all know that the client is able to call up Prudential or Northwestern or State Farm or whoever, Farm Bureau, whoever it happens to be, and say, please send me my $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, that $25,000 is countable. So anything that a client has access to that they can liquidate spend on their care, that's going to be countable, with these few exceptions that Wes mentioned, like, you know, one car, et cetera. There are a few other exceptions.
Very good. Excellent discussion. We're just scratching the surface here, I believe. So we'll continue this conversation next week on Let's Talk Legal with talk about elder law with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. Again, their phone number, 252-726-9050. They're located at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. And you can always go online at harvellandcollins.com. Thank you, gentlemen. We will see you next week on another Let's Talk Legal. We'll be right back after this short break.